You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Auden Chandler has worked in the environmental field for 15 years, and he's currently the executive director of sustainability at Aspen Skiing Company. He's written a book called Getting Green Done, Hard Truths from the Front Lines of the Sustainability Revolution, which is published by Public Affairs. And I'm pleased that it has brought Auden Chandler to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Your book focuses on the challenges we face in implementing sustainability. Why do you think that this part of the story has been pretty much left out of the discussion until now?
Well, if you read the magazine articles and listen to the radio and TV, you see there's tons of talk about all the basically theoretical solutions. And nobody's talking about what happens when you actually try to do this. And the reality is it's extremely difficult. If it were easy, if sustainability were easy, we would have done it by now. But it's enormously challenging, and we never hear that side of the story.
Do you worry that talking about the harsher realities involved in putting sustainability into practice might be discouraging people?
I think there's that concern, and the best example would be climate science. Right now, the lead voices out there like Al Gore are very optimistic, even though if you go into the scientific community, they're pulling their hair out and they're literally almost rocking in a corner with fear over climate. My concern is if you make people think we're going to solve this, don't worry, they'll get in the attitude of, okay, I'll do a few little things and wait for technology to evolve. I think it's worth risking scaring people to get them to understand the scope and scale of the climate problem.
Well, before we begin, maybe you should define sustainability as you understand it.
Yeah, sustainability, typically you go to a conference and there for 20 years there's been the keynote speaker stands up, wrings his or her hands and says, "What is sustainability?" And it's very annoying. They use the UN Brundtland Commission definition every time, and that is meeting our needs without compromising future generations' ability to meet their own needs.
Well, that sounds reasonable.
It is, but it's too complicated. It's pretty easy. My definition is it's staying in business forever. If your business is a parent, being a parent, you need to do certain things to be a parent forever. That means solving climate, dealing with toxics, providing a stable economy for your kids, working on education.
Well, you write about the benefits of sustainability for businesses, real businesses, including saving money through efficiencies, all the media attention that a project generates, building a positive reputation. So what makes those projects such a hard sell?
The problem is that corporations are, by definition, designed to make a profit. And even if you present something like a lighting retrofit that offers a huge return on investment, swap out the lights, it costs you $1,000 and you make $1,000 a year in savings. In many businesses, mine being no exception, in the ski industry, you make money by selling hotel rooms or selling lift tickets. You don't make money by saving energy in a garage no one sees. So it's completely off the radar. And here's the other problem. Energy for all of our lives, for the history of energy, has been ridiculously cheap. The only time it was expensive was when we were getting it from whales. You know, I mean, think of energy like fish in water. It surrounds us, but we're completely unaware of it.
And it even affects us on a rather mundane basis. Recently, I needed some light bulbs, went to the hardware store. And, of course, I went to the fluorescents, and they were $7, $8 a bulb, $2 for four of the old kind of bulb. And even though the fluorescents said that this will last 100 years and save you a lot of money, well, I know that they often go out within a relatively short time. There is a real sacrifice. There's a monetary sacrifice, even on a very personal level.
Right. And on that bulb question, you know, okay, so it's going to cost you a few extra cents to run those bulbs. Who cares? As an example, a kilowatt hour of power, which you pay about 12 cents for, is a dishwasher load. Think of you standing at the sink doing dishes for that long. 8 cents, 12 cents, it's a crazy bargain. Now, those bulbs, if you want to talk about that later, they're down to under $2 thanks to work by Walmart. But
We don't have Walmart in New York.
Oh, right.
And there are good reasons for that. But that's a whole other story. So how have you gone about selling a business on a green project?
You know, if you go to the gurus, They'll say, well, get everyone on board culturally, and here's why we're doing it, and here's a list of 10 reasons. It's profitable, it's good for PR, et cetera. My approach has been, don't even do that. Just quietly, if possible, do something that's so exciting and so sexy and so profitable that it gets management's attention. So an example would be Sustainability 101 is a lighting retrofit. And let me add that when I define sustainability and environmentalism, that means solving climate change. That's the baseline.
Aren't you going to have a harder sell even now because of the economic downturn?
I think there are two ways to look at it. One is it's going to be harder, but the other way is companies are looking for every possible way to save energy and money. And if you have something with anything above a 30% return on investment, that's going to be very attractive. So it may actually get easier. We're starting to say, hey, this energy is costing us a lot, and this is a no-brainer.
What about ethics? Isn't that also a concern of companies, or is that just something that we like to talk about?
One of the challenges is if every corporation did everything they needed to do, they could do at good profit, like 10, 20, 30, 40% return on investment, and cut their CO2 emissions 30%. That would be a huge success for a corporation. But that wouldn't even be close to what we need to do on reducing CO2 emissions. We have to get 80% down by 2050. Now, if they did that, that would only be the motivated ethical corporations, and the 99 out of 100 others aren't doing it. So I argue that you can't just have this economic ROI argument. You have to have an ethical backing.
My guest is Auden Schendler, S-C-H-E-N-D-L-E-R. His book, Getting Green Done, Hard Truths from the Front Lines of the Sustainability Revolution, published by Public Affairs. You discuss your work at the Hotel Little Nell. What difficulties did your efficiency measures come up against there?
Well, the Little Nell is probably the fanciest place on the planet. It's a 5-star hotel in Aspen. That should tell you enough. But there are 90 master sommeliers in the United States, and the Nell has 2. So this is, you know, very, very fancy. And when I got out of the nonprofit sector, I went to the Nell manager and I said what I learned in the nonprofit sector, which is, hey, we're going to go into all your rooms and swap out all your light bulbs. You're going to save all this money and you'll get more longer lasting bulbs, so you won't have to, your maintenance guys can attend to guests' needs, whatever that may be. And the response was no. And I couldn't believe it. I was told no businessman would turn down, this was a 50% return on investment. And he said, Auden, and this is a wonderful guy who is a friend of mine, and he says, Auden, I'm selling rooms, and when I go to Las Vegas and crash in a Motel 6, there are compact fluorescent bulbs there. I don't want people coming into the room, having the lights flicker, and then feeling like they're about to do surgery or just walked into the janitor's closet. So he said, I don't want to do that. And I said, oh, I understand.
Because image is important in a 5-star hotel.
It's everything. And let me, you know, this next story illustrates that. I said, okay, what about the hallways? And he said, no. And I said, well, why? And the answer was that every year a mystery guest comes to the hotel, has some wine, stays in a room in a suite for 2 days. That's the AAA 5-diamond 4-star auditor. And what if that person felt the cold light was negative and for some reason downgraded the star rating? If you're a hotel manager, you go from 5 stars to 4 stars, it's the apocalypse. Your career's over. You're the guy who lost the 5-star rating. Who cares if you spend an extra $100,000 a year on energy when that's the thing at stake? So the upshot of the story is we ended up doing it, a retrofit in the garage but not in the rooms because no one saw them. And the barriers I ran into, no one told me about.
Did you feel discouraged at all by this process?
Hugely discouraged. And the analogy I use is I came out of the nonprofit sector. I was young. I was idealistic. I'm not as jaded as I am now. And I came over the top of the trench ready to go, and I got machine gunned. Because I gave you 2 barriers, but there were actually 6 or 7 I ran into.
And you felt that you were making the good argument and that anybody would be moved by it.
Well, and as another example, I said to one senior manager, these bulbs will save 50% of energy. And he said, I don't believe it. And I said, wait, every Fortune 500 company is doing this. I showed him a watt meter that I don't believe it's going to save energy. This person believes in God. Mm-hmm. You know, so belief in a supernatural being is easier than belief in an energy-efficient light bulb.
You write that cream-skimming energy measures is what's come to define the implementation of a green business today. What do you mean by
cream skimming? Cream skimming or cherry picking is saying, here we have a suite of things we can do.
So they could do the garage.
Yeah. We're going to do the one with the 100% return on investment, the one that no one in their right mind wouldn't do. And then we're going to declare victory. And that is sustainable business today. But what you need to do is do the 10% return on investment, the 6%, the negative 6%, the fixing the building that has no return if we're going to solve climate. And those things aren't happening. And that's why I say, look, it ain't going to happen without a massive government intervention. And you hate to be the guy who says government's the solution. But this is such a big problem that we can only solve it in a short time frame with a government policy.
And so Hotel Little Nell probably would do all the things you suggested if the government set certain standards for hotels, and they knew that when that guy came in to check out the hotel, that he'd be aware of the fact that they had to switch over to fluorescence.
Right. And as an example, I went to a facility in Minneapolis, and I talked to the manager, and I said, well, why aren't you doing lighting retrofits? And he said, do you know how much we pay for power? I said, no. And he said, 4 cents a kilowatt hour. I'm paying 8. So the projects I could barely pull off were now twice as hard for him to pull off. So one thing government can do is make energy cost more.
Now, why isn't this happening in Colorado? Colorado, a state where a very strong environmental movement. Well, and Aspen, a town that supposedly is environmentally conscious.
Well, at the Nell, in the end, we did pull off a huge amount of these projects. So it has been successful. And Colorado, under the leadership of an amazing guy, our governor, Bill Ritter, who has done missionary work in Africa, just a remarkably interesting guy, we are now kind of getting on the forefront of this work. But my point is, even in places like Aspen, where we care, we have a guiding principles that say we should do this, we have private ownership that's very motivated, even for us it's hard. Now take business as usual, and that's going to be almost impossible.
When states do try, sometimes they run into odd roadblocks, as we saw in California, where they try to change fuel emission standards, and the White House at the time said, you can't do this.
Right, and that was just criminal. You know, the EPA under Bush was not really following the law. The EPA was told by the Supreme Court under Massachusetts versus EPA to regulate carbon dioxide as a pollutant. And Stephen Johnson, under Bush's guidance, said, we're just not going to do it until the next administration.
So you're suggesting that we're going to just see a lot of greenwashing, you know, doing stuff that's easy to do until we're forced to go in another way. And do you see that as being likely? Do you see this Congress or any Congress in the future being willing to make those hard decisions?
I think that, one, you have already seen a lot of greenwash. But one of the things is a lot of these companies are genuinely trying to do the right thing.
We did, by the way. When we built these new studios,
right,
we talked about going green. Now, I don't know how much of it is greenwashing and how much of it is really important stuff.
Right.
But I think that when people build new facilities, as we did here, we just moved in here about 8-9 months ago, they are often thinking in these terms.
Yeah. And often you reach a point where, hey, if you just had $50,000 more, I could put in a boiler that would save you $50,000 a year. And you go to the contractor, and the subtext of that is the smug environmentalist, the arrogant environmentalist saying, are you stupid? Don't you get this? And the contractor, I've been in both positions, the smug guy and the contractor. And the contractor says, I went to college. I understand these issues. I don't have the money. I have a fixed budget. So do you want me to not put chairs in the building or do the boiler? Just to answer your question, will the government move? Obama's approach on climate, I compare to Bush's approach on extreme right-wing issues. When he campaigned, he spoke in code and never gave the right what they wanted. But when he got in office, he was their dream come true. Obama didn't necessarily please the environmental community when he was running. But when he got in, within the first week, he gave a speech that everyone recognized was the most progressive stance on climate in the world. And then he appointed Stephen Chu, Lisa Jackson, Carol Browner. These people are luminaries on the issue of solving climate change. So we are going to see action. And the other reason is we have to see action.
My guest is Auden Schindler. His book, Getting Green Done, Hard Truths from the Front Lines of the Sustainability Revolution, published by Public Affairs. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back with Auden Schindler, who is Executive Director of Sustainability at Aspen Skiing Company. He has worked in corporate sustainability at the Rocky Mountain Institute and done many other things in the field. He's now written a book called Getting Green Done, Hard Truths from the Front Lines of the Sustainability Revolution. It is published by Public Affairs. And in your introduction, you speak about the Aspen Ski Company's new chairlifts, which are the standard for world-class resort, but increase electricity usage. Do you think that the way our economy is currently set up, that there's an inherent conflict of interest for businesses who want to lower carbon emissions?
There is. And the best example of that is the corporate legal structure of a corporation, which says if you aren't doing everything you can do to make money for the shareholder can sue you. So by definition, you have to make more money. Well, making more money means using more energy. We're a privately owned company, but we're a ski resort.
So there's another side too, isn't there? If somebody comes along with the latest, the cutting edge in something, whether it's a ski lift or anything else, but it isn't the most energy efficient, but at the same time, you know it's going to sell you to the public you're going for. You're caught in a bind, aren't you?
Well, there's a host of different problems there. One is, yeah, you have a job to do. So ultimately, you can't say, well, skiing is too energy intensive, let's not do it. You have to say, we're going to fix the whole economy so that when you ski or fly or subsistence farm, your carbon footprint is much less. Your point about the corollary to your point of, okay, a new technology comes along. What if a new technology came along that was super efficient? Here's what happens. You use it and it doesn't work. And then you're toast. You know, you're screwed. You got to fix it. And we did this as an example 6 years ago with waterless urinals. Great idea. Why use a gallon per flush when you can use nothing? And well, here's an example of a barrier you never saw coming. The plumbing union doesn't like them because they're out of work. So that's an example. But here we installed it. Our CEO, who started our environmental program, worked out in the morning and used the urinal. And he came to me. This is 8 in the morning after his 3-hour workout. And he says, Auden, I'm going on vacation next week. That thing is going to be gone when I'm back. It smells. It doesn't work. It has fossilized residue in it. Well, those urinals are now being used all over the world very successfully. We were the first guys to try it, and we got so badly burned that we only this year, 8 years later, started using them again.
Have they been improved?
They have been improved, and they work fantastically.
So sometimes, and this is a problem, sometimes it's not best to be the first one with something because somebody else has to go through all of the growing pains.
Right. But the challenge is we have, according to leading climatologists, 10 years to solve this climate problem because the decisions we make today on buildings, power plants, policy last forever.
So it might be okay to put up with smelly urinals.
Yeah. So my attitude is adopting the Green Berets approach, which is their motto is we break things and kill people. This is going to hurt. You know, we're going to have to – this is going to be painful. We're going to – you know, things are going to be messy and terrible, and we got to go for it.
You've called one of your chapters Finding Your Biggest Lever. What does that mean?
If you look today, one of the challenges in the environmental movement, we talked about the scale of climate. It's overwhelming. I basically don't understand how big it is. And yet, the average person, I get this phone call that's like this. Hi, is this the environmental department? Yes. Oh, good. You know, your season passes, they're basically credit cards of plastic. Can you recycle those or can you make them out of corn? And I say, if you're focused on that, not only is it a distraction, but it's actively bad for the environmental movement because you're missing the big picture. It's exactly what Noam Chomsky says when he's talking about totalitarian governments liking sports fans. Because if you're focused on it, on sports and the statistics of the Yankees, you're not watching what the government's doing. So what I say is even a corporation can't be deluded that these small things matter, that you can do those small things, but don't stop there. So finding the biggest lever. Corporations need to say, what is our big lever? Well, for Aspen, it's not changing light bulbs. It's not running our lifts on wind. It's the fact that we get international press because of who we are all over the world. And we have very influential people who come here. So at the Little Nell, in one room where George Soros stays, we put an energy monitor that monitors the energy in the room and is tied to solar panels on the roof. Well, and that's the home page of the computer in the room. And the computers are always on, of course. But if he gets that message, he can drive more change than 10 years of lighting retrofits for us. And I could give you five examples of other levers.
Well, in that chapter, you compare Walmart to Ford.
Yeah, so Walmart asked this question. If Walmart had asked its guests, what should we do? They would have said, well, sell more hemp stuff, do recycling, and put solar on the roof. But instead, Walmart went to a professor at Brown University and said, what really should we do to be more environmentally responsible? The professor said, you guys sell more stuff than anyone in the world, so you need to change the stuff you sell. And Walmart said, okay, that $8 compact fluorescent that you could barely find, we're going to make it $2 by bringing the price down as only Walmart can. And we're going to sell 100 million of these. That's one for every American household. And if they use them, that's two large coal-fired power plants taken offline.
Now, somebody might argue that to bring that price down, they're forcing somebody to make that bulb at a lower price at near slave labor in China or Thailand or Vietnam or Honduras.
And what you're saying is this is going to be hard and messy and complicated and morally complicated. And the answer is absolutely. There are some big issues.
What did Ford do wrong?
So just to continue, Walmart, they have sold 260 million, twice what they thought they could sell. And that's not the story. The story is that you can't soon, you're not going to be able to buy that incandescent bulb. California's banned them. Ireland, Australia, they've all banned them. What did Ford do? Ford said, we're going to rebuild our factory in Dearborn, the original Ford factory, for $2 billion. And we're going to make it the greenest place in the world. Well, that's great, but Ford makes cars. And Ford cars have sucked historically on energy efficiency, which is all that matters.
So they did a green factory to produce a lot of pollution.
Right. And my point isn't that I'm so smart I saw this coming. I would have probably built the Ford factory myself. The point is we can learn from this that you got to be honest about what your impact is.
Of course, Ford was doing something good in creating that green factory. Now they have to start producing cars that don't pollute.
Yeah.
Which they can do in that factory, I'm sure.
Yeah. We just don't have time to make mistakes like that.
Auden Schindler's book is Getting Green Done, Hard Truths from the Front Lines of the Sustainability Revolution. It's published by Public Affairs. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Many people feel that the only way we're going to resolve this is to develop new technologies. That's what we've done in the past. Do you think that it's going to work in this case?
In some ways, the problem is that we've solved large pressing issues with technology, the ozone layer. One of the great environmental successes of humanity solved through, in part, a new technology developed by DuPont for refrigerants. The problem with climate is if you say that, and there are a lot of people who do, we need to invest massively in technology, it doesn't work in the energy sector. There has never been a disruptive, like a computer kind of innovation in the energy sector. Royal Dutch Shell says it takes 25 years for a new energy technology to achieve 1% of the whole energy market. So the term that an analyst named Joe Rome uses for technology optimists is climate delayers. They're, you know, it's an example like the Bush administration saying we're going to pursue hydrogen. Well, hydrogen was 20 years off and it still is. But it made them look like they were doing something when they were not. Delay is as good as denial on climate because we don't have time.
What would be our biggest lever as a country?
Biggest lever right now today would be to pass some sort of carbon tax that sends a signal to the markets that energy is going to be expensive. Now, this doesn't have to hurt the little guy. If you go to the pump tomorrow and it costs $500 to fill up your car and your monthly utility bill is now $2,000, that's going to brutal for you. But I just eliminated your payroll tax. So now we're taxing the stuff we don't want, pollution, and that's economics 101. You tax something, you get less of it. Why tax your income? And then so you're revenue neutral in terms of what's in your wallet, but you're massively incentivized to get a more efficient car.
Well, the problem there is that you're punishing the poor because the poor are paying for the rich are not paying any income taxes, and they're paying the same amount of money to fill up their cars as the poor people.
Not if you eliminate the payroll tax or the income tax. In other words, we haven't done anything. The tax system stayed the same. We've just shifted it. So you're paying taxes on pollution instead of income.
You've written that the small things like cities banning plastic bags, for example, or individual actions like recycling can actually be bad for the sustainability movement. Why?
The reason is that people focus on these things and think they're done. So as Bill McKibben has said, by all means, screw in that efficient light bulb, but then go screw in a new senator And people always add, stop getting screwed by the old one. That's the attitude. These things are important, but even if everyone's so motivated in the world, let's say every American did this, we'd miss the solution by a factor of 100.
But I am seeing a big difference. I go to the supermarket now and notice quite a few people are bringing in their bags instead of taking the plastic bag. And I take that as a sign that Americans are thinking about this.
So if that is a reflection of how they're going to vote and whether they're going to write their senator and whether they're going to get out in the street on a protest against a coal plant, great. But if it's just the bag, it's pointless.
Are there some cities that are doing better jobs in promoting sustainability than others?
There are. There's probably no one who's better than this than New York. Bloomberg totally understands this challenge.
But for a while, he didn't want to have recycling.
And that was, him recognizing the scale of the problem. Look, if you're spending a ton of money on recycling, but you need to spend it on climate, you're being distracted. So, again, people love recycling, but he was thinking correctly and honestly and painfully in that respect. Seattle, Denver, Salt Lake City under the ex-mayor Rocky Anderson, and then Portland, they're all very progressive. But as Jim Hansen has said, you see a lot of talk, Jim Hansen, the NASA climatologist, but the scale of the action doesn't meet the scale of the problem, and that's the challenge.
Do you see yourself as an environmentalist?
I was on the plane recently, and a grandmother next to me asked what I did and said, oh, you're an environmentalist. And I cringed because there's so much baggage. There's the, self-righteousness, the, I'm better than you, the I cry for the earth every day, which someone said to me recently. I don't see myself that way. I think of myself more as a business person and a reasonable person. And the baggage of the 70s where there was this self-righteousness, I don't judge anyone for driving an SUV, for example. You probably, in Colorado, if you hit an elk, you want to be in an SUV. And there's no other option. I've got two little kids, and we are in a Honda Civic, and it's horrendous. So I couldn't find the bigger, efficient car.
Well, they're now starting to make hybrid SUVs.
Right, and my Honda gets better mileage than that hybrid Highlander, so I'll still drive the Honda.
I don't know why, but this is depressing me, this conversation.
Oh, let's get out of the depression.
I think can we leave on a happier note?
Yeah. Let's
I'm about to go out and buy an SUV and ask for a plastic bag and I'm not going to recycle anymore.
Right. The question is, how do you wake up in the morning knowing what I know or you know about climate science and not go in the closet, turn off the lights, grab your knees, get a bottle of bourbon, rock, and eat Chinese food? And the answer is this. Solving climate change provides humanity with this opportunity at meaning. Because if you solve climate, you solve energy, you solve pollution, you solve poverty, you solve clean water availability, you even solve waste, because if you have enough clean energy, you can solve waste issues. And humans haven't had this comprehensive shot at meaning in their lives since the creation of religions 2,000 and 4,000 years ago. They were all created to give people a sense of dignity and grace and meaning and care and tolerance. And if you solve climate, you meet all those goals. So I think humans can't turn that opportunity down. I think we have to do it because it's in our blood and bone. So that's your optimistic note.
Auden Schindler's book is Getting Green Done, Hard Truths from the Front Lines of the Sustainability Revolution. It's published by Public Affairs. Thank you so much for being with us today.
It's been my pleasure.